The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Sports Talk 1240 is brought to you by DraftPot.com. DraftPot is changing fantasy sports. Sign up today at DraftPot.com with promo code SportsTalk1240 and receive a 100% deposit bonus. And now, Sports Talk 1240.
Well, good evening and hello again, everybody. Welcome to hour number one of Sports Talk 1240 on WGBB, Freeport, Long Island, New York. Bill Donahue taking you through the first hour on this Sunday night, the 27th day of December. Our engineer Brian Graves is across the way. Got a great show lined up for you tonight. Up first, we'll welcome in the former left wing for the New York Rangers, two-time Stanley Cup winner Adam Graves will join us. In the second half, we'll talk to Super Bowl-winning defensive end for the New York Giants, George Martin. So sit back, relax, enjoy Sports Talk 1240 tonight on GBB. We've got some great stuff ahead in the next few hours. As always, before we begin, I invite you to follow us on our Facebook page, cleverly titled Sports Talk 1240. There you'll find sports information, show information, and more. So stop by, give us a look, then you can click and give us a like. You can also follow us on Twitter at SportsTalk1240. And as always, all past shows can be heard on our website at www.sportstalk1240.com. Well, my first guest played 17 years in the NHL for the Detroit Red Wings, the Edmonton Oilers, where he won his first Stanley Cup, the San Jose Sharks, and, of course, the New York Rangers. Part of the great New York Rangers Cup team in 1994 and the scorer of 329 career NHL goals, I welcome to Sports Talk 1240 tonight, Adam Graves. Adam, good evening.
Yeah, it's great to be with you, Bill. How are you?
Great. Having a good night. Jets won. No snow, so we're doing all right, Adam.
Well, around Christmas, we like a little bit of snow, especially us from Canada.
Oh, yeah, I bet.
It's part of the course.
You grew up in the Toronto area, Adam. Well, what were your favorite teams, if I could guess? What players? Who did you root for?
Well, when I was growing up, I lived in Toronto, delivered the Globe and Mail, which is a Canadian newspaper. It's the equivalent of the New York Times, so to speak, in New York. And every day I would go to the store and I'd grab the Sun, which I didn't deliver, but because they had Toronto Maple Leaf pictures in them that you could cut out and then put on the wall in my bedroom. My favorite player was Darryl Sittler. So a lot of fond memories growing up as a kid, and certainly as a Leaf fan a long time ago, many years ago, and was a lot of fun growing up because Darryl Sittler was a heck of a guy both on and off the ice.
Sure was. Yeah, Hall of Famer Darryl Sittler, definitely. Now, you came up with Detroit, Adam. You had a chance to play with Steve Yzerman. Talk a little about your days in Detroit.
Well, certainly anytime you are fortunate enough, and that was when Stevie was rather young. He was just named the first captain of the Detroit, or the youngest captain in Detroit Red Wing history at the time, and then went on, obviously, to be a captain for close to 20 years of the Wings, and one of the great players to ever play the game, and certainly an excellent general manager and someone that has had a great deal of influence in hockey over the last three decades. So as a young player coming into the league and being able to sit there and watch and follow someone like Stevie Y, although he's only 3-4 years older than me, he was mature beyond his years, and his work ethic was unparalleled, and certainly his ability and all the championships he's won along the way have come through hard work and dedication and something that really leaves a lasting impression on a young guy, and I was a young guy at the time.
Sure. What a champion, Steve Yzerman. Now you were traded after 2 years to the Edmonton Oilers. How did you feel about that, even though you got to win a cup straight away in Edmonton?
Well, again, for me, a good for the majority of my career, I was one of those players that played a simple game. I was very fortunate in the players that I was surrounded by, and that, for me, was the first time I got the privilege of meeting, Mark Messier, mm-hmm. and Kevin Lowe and Jari Kurri and Esa Tikkanen and all those great players that the Oilers had through their dynasty years, but certainly starting with Mark and what he, what he represented both on and off the ice and if you ask anyone that was fortunate enough to play with him, and I know that we often reflect back, whether it's talking to Mike Richter, Ricky, Brian Leach or anyone that's had the good fortune of playing, alongside Mark, you always consider yourself fortunate because he taught us so much. And those lessons started in Edmonton from the first day I got off the plane in November of 89 when I was traded to every time I see him now, and reflect back on all the wonderful years that I was lucky enough to play with him. But it was a team with a bounty full of great character guys.
Sure was. After your time in Edmonton, Adam, you became a free agent. You signed with the Rangers, joining Messier and Bukaboom, your former Oiler teammates. Why'd you pick the Rangers?
Well, I think for me at the time, Neil Smith was a general manager, and he was the fellow that drafted me when I was with Detroit. So, and I had played for him with Adirondack. We were lucky enough to win a Calder Cup in '89. And I had the good fortune of getting to know him in Detroit, and when the opportunity arose and they took the chance in signing me, it was something that I felt was a great privilege, and certainly being an original 16 and being in New York when I was a young kid and knowing what a wonderful city it was, although intimidating for me as a young kid, it always seemed like larger than life, and then to get the opportunity to play at the Garden certainly and sign and be a Ranger was a dream come true, and certainly something that I'll always be thankful for that opportunity.
Great. Now, you played for John Muckler in Edmonton. You played for him later on with the Rangers. Talk a little bit about Muckler, very, very successful coach in the NHL. Talk a little bit about his style of play.
Well, certainly he was someone that I think, tried to dissect, even almost to the point where it is now, but back before his time, dissect the other team's breakout, their tactically, what they, their habits, and would almost two or three days before we're going to play a team, would adjust our style or our system. And when you talk about smart hockey, man, I mean, you think of, Glenn Sather and Muckler being together during those 80s, and it was no small task taking on those Islander teams in the early 80s going on to win five Stanley Cups. It's, you have two really, really sharp guys and two guys that know the game, know what it takes as far as the personalities, what it takes, as far as focus and drive and all those intangibles. But when you put a guy like Muckler in there, a guy that can really break down the game almost ahead of his time, it just made the game so much easier for us younger guys. And I can remember spending at times hours and hours in the film room with him in Edmonton, then even in New York, especially in Edmonton as a young guy. And that was so important in my development as a young guy, learning the game and understanding what it took and what it was going to take to have success at that level, because it's obviously – it's the best players in the world. So he was a great teacher.
Sure. We're speaking to Adam Graves tonight on Sports Talk 1240. You also played for Roger Nielsen. Now, I believe it was Ty Domi I was speaking to a few weeks ago on the show, and he sung the praises of Roger Nielsen. How did you feel about Roger?
Well, I don't think there's anyone that's ever played for Roger that didn't have the utmost respect for him. He was someone that has left a lasting impact on everyone that he had ever come across, ever coached. You were ever in his presence. You always had a smile on your face, and you always knew that Roger was committed to not only his players as far as preparing them to play hockey, but more importantly, his people. And he was a true gentleman and someone that has been missed for many years, but his legacy and what he represented and who he was will live on forever.
Sure will. One guy you played with, Adam, that we spoke about Messier. We talked a little bit about Mike Richter. One guy, a great Hall of Famer defenseman, a scoring defenseman, which is tough to find, Brian Leach. Now, to me, he was one of the unsung heroes of that great Stanley Cup club. Talk a little bit about what Brian Leach meant.
Well, you're talking to probably Brian's biggest fan. I was lucky enough to play against him when I was 17, under 18. I was playing for Team Canada. He was playing for Team U.S., and I've told this story many times. We played him in a two-game series, and I'll never forget because there was probably about 15 first-round picks to the National Hockey League the following summer, and he was head and shoulders, far and away, the best player on the ice. And I'll never forget shaking hands at the end of the two-game series and saying, "You're one heck of a hockey player. Good luck to you." And then to fast forward it, you know, 5-6 years, and we ended up playing on the same team, and I had the good fortune of looking back whenever I was up on the wing and knowing that Brian was behind me to cover up for a lot of mistakes that I made. And then when he did take the puck up ice, he made the game so much easier for myself. And then there wasn't anyone that competed as hard and as tough as he was. And people think of toughness in fighting. That's not toughness. Toughness is taking a hit, making a hit, blocking a shot. He broke more bones blocking shots. And then you come back from injury and do it again. I mean, he was fearless. He was a tremendous, tremendous player and a tremendous teammate and friend.
Definitely the great Brian Leetch. Now, during the 93-94 season, Adam, that great Stanley Cup year, you scored 52 goals. At the time, that set a New York Rangers franchise record, erasing the great Vic Hadfield's mark of 50. That had to be an honor for you.
Well, without question. It was something that I never envisioned myself doing because I was more of a plumber, a grinder, going to the front of the net, try to play hard in straight lines and work off of the people that I was lucky enough to play with. And I was a product of my environment. I mean, I was very fortunate getting the opportunity to play with Mark makes the game so much easier. Playing with Brian, playing with the quality players that I was able to in New York, and certainly in that season. When you think about a power play where you have Mark Messier and then you have Sergei Zubov and Brian Leetch on the point,
boy.
I mean, and Steve Armour sometimes and Alex Kovalev, I mean, that's a treat. Tony Monty that year, Mike Gardner, I mean, that's a treat to be able to get out in the ice, and it just makes the game so much easier. Certainly for me, I was very, very fortunate to play with those guys.
People may forget the great Hall of Famer Mike Gardner on the Rangers. Good catch there, Adam. Now, let's talk about the Eastern Conference Finals that year. To many, had to be one of the greatest series ever played between the Rangers and the Devils. We had Captain Mark Messier coming out like Joe Namath, making one of his predictions that the Rangers would take it. Talk a little bit about, Adam, if you would, that great Eastern Conference Final Series versus New Jersey.
Well, some would say that that was one of the top series ever played in the National Hockey League Stanley Cup playoffs. And it's hard to compare, you know, eras, but as far as a series and two closely matched teams and two teams that had so much depth and had, you know, on both sides, both two big teams, tough teams, both played hard in all three zones. And I'll never forget because it was just like you had to fight for every inch of ice in that series. And certainly having, you know, key moments where Steph Matteau scored those two overtime goals. Certainly Game 7, everyone remembers that. But I believe it was in Game 3, he scored one as well. And then just the physicality of it, you know, the ebbs and flows of the series where the ice would get tilted for good lengths of time and then Broder or Ricky would stand on their head. And it was just one of those series that you could watch all day. And fortunately enough, when we did fall behind and we needed that leadership that only Mark can deliver. He had that big game and scored the hat trick, and certainly we all know it's well documented that there's only one Mark Messier, and certainly that is something that you never forget in sport. And we were all very lucky to be a part of it, and certainly it turned the series for us.
Definitely the immortal Battle of the Hudson, folks. That brought out Howie Rose's tremendous game-winning call, Matteau, and that'll live in the annals of Rangers history forever. Now, we spoke a little bit about Neil Smith, Adam. Mike Keenan, tremendous job coaching that year. He left after 1 year. Let's talk about Mike Keenan.
Well, Mike was the perfect coach for our team because we had won the President's Trophy 91-92 and then missed the playoffs the following year. And I know going to World Championships in 92-93, he was a coach over there. And his reputation preceded itself. I think that he was a perfect coach for a team that was, you know, on the cusp, and certainly with the leadership of Mike and Mark and Colin Campbell and Dick Todd. I thought that our staff was fantastic, and the leadership within the locker room, whether it was Craig McTavish, Kevin Lowe, you know, Brian Leach, we just had you know, Jay Wells. We had so many people that took on leadership roles, but certainly Mike Keenan was a perfect coach for that team, and fortunately enough, it played itself out.
Yeah. It was a shame. Now, that was the first time, Adam, in Cup history that Russians had their name on the Stanley Cup. Just like we spoke to Dave Langevin, the champion Islander, a few weeks ago and spoke about the Europeans being on their first Stanley Cup, Andras Kalar and Stefan Pearson. And the Rangers had four Russians. And you can tell us who they are.
Well, certainly when you talk about Karpatsev and Potsy and Zubov and Kovalev and Sarge Nemchinov, four wonderful guys, and we were very, very proud to call them teammates. Certainly, we wouldn't have won without their contributions, huge contributions. And I think when you look back on their careers, you know, Alex Kovalev, one of the most talented players to ever play in the National Hockey League. I think he had over 400 goals, and obviously Stanley Cup champion Sergei Nemchinov, although he came over when he was in his late 20s, still had an excellent career. Sergei Zubov, you know, was one of the top four or five defensemen for 12, 15 years. I mean, an excellent, excellent player. And then Alexander Karpatsev, and we all know that unfortunately he passed away in that, you know, the plane accident in Russia. But a huge part of our hockey club, and they all four of them were wonderful teammates and guys that worked very, very hard and were, like I said, huge parts of our championship team.
Definitely. We're speaking to Adam Graves tonight on Sports Talk 1240. Adam, you were one of seven alumni of the Edmonton Oilers dynasty to be on that Cup team with Bukka Boom, Glenn Anderson, Kevin Lowe, Craig McTavish, of course, Mark Messier, and Issa taken in, who we mentioned before. I don't think that's any coincidence, do you?
Well, it was, you know, they don't, you don't ask how or where players played. You just, you play for each other, and certainly you want to, I guess, lean on your experience when you can. And when it comes to guys like Kevin Lowe and a Jeff Bukka Boom and guys that have won before and won a number of times, obviously Mark and Glenn Anderson and you know, Craig McTavish. That experience really, you know, plays a pivotal role when you're going through adversity, and not just in the playoffs, but leading up to the playoffs and at different times where, you know, they have the ability to step back and put things in perspective. And I think a lot of times settle everyone within the locker room down, and that's the key to winning. And fortunately enough, you know, all those guys, you know, at different times would take that role on, whether it was a Book or a Kevin Lowe. It didn't always have to be Mark.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking about you, not only as a player, Adam, but as a person, you picked up two NHL awards, the King Clancy Memorial Trophy in 93-94 and in 2001, the great Bill Masterson Trophy, which exemplifies the qualities of perseverance, sportsmanship, and dedication to hockey. Talk a little bit about what those awards meant to you. As I said, it speaks not only to you as a player, but as a human being.
Well, I think that's a great privilege of being an athlete and certainly playing in New York and being a Ranger, is the support you get on and off the ice. And more importantly, it's the people that you meet along the way. And all these experiences, as great as they are great because of one thing and one thing only, and that's the people. So for me, as a part of the Ranger organization, and now even, you know, over the last 10 years being part of the Ranger organization, that's a great privilege. whether we're out in the community with the Garden of Dreams, or we have different things that we're doing with people that we've met along the way. It's the interaction. It's the ability to, you know, to meet people that you might not otherwise get the opportunity to meet. In a lot of instances, some of these kids or people, they're not hockey fans, but they appreciate that you're taking interest in what they're doing. And in some small way, it puts a smile on their face. And at the end of the day, when they're smiling, you're smiling, and it's a two-way street. So for me, I always looked at it as a great privilege, something that I always enjoyed and will continue to enjoy, and hope to be a part of that our Ranger New York community for a long, long time.
Of course. Now, getting traded to San Jose, Adam, how did that make you feel?
Well, there's you know what, it was unfortunately, that's part of the game.
Yeah.
And history will tell you that the way I played, I have too much hockey left in me, although I very much enjoyed being out in California. The Sharks organization treated me with nothing but class. You know, I look back with fond memories of playing in San Jose, but when you are with the team that you love as much as I love being a Ranger, it's never easy, but that's part of the game. And fortunately enough for me, although I was traded, I was lucky enough, you know, with Glenn and everyone at the Garden to be able to come back and be a part of the organization again a couple years later, and truly look at it as a privilege.
You took advantage of that. Now, you did help that San Jose team. They were a young, talented team, and Adam certainly added to that hockey club. But let's talk a little bit about February 3rd, 2009, the night the Rangers raised number 9 to the rafters to join Leach, Messier, Richter, and the Immortals Gilbert and Eddie Jockeman in the rafters of the Garden.
Well, even to this day, I look back on that and feel very sheepish and humbled, because I understand how great a player is, you know, the gentleman that you just talked about, and what they meant to the organization and the careers they had and the Hall of Fame careers that they had. And I understand that big reason why I was lucky enough to be a part of that group is because I got to play with those guys. And they made the game so much easier. So for me, it was a very humbling night, and one that I'll always look back on. And I think I don't know if I'll ever be totally comfortable, but certainly very proud and privileged beyond words. I do understand, how great players from Harry Howell and Andy Bathgate, and I said that when Mr. Bathgate's jersey went up, that he was the greatest number 9 to ever play for the Rangers, and I was just lucky to have had the opportunity to wear that number 9 after him. So for me, it's very humbling and something that, I'm obviously proud, very, very proud of, but something that I feel very humbled by.
Was that the pinnacle for you, Adam, or was it winning the cup?
Winning the cup for sure. Anything you can do with people. Winning the cup, certainly in Edmonton with my mom and dad there at the Boston Garden was outstanding. And then winning in New York after, you know, the storied, you know, original 16. I mean, that's hard to match, you know, how great a feeling and how great an accomplishment that was, and why it was such a great accomplishment is because it wasn't just the team on the ice or in the locker room or the management team or the coaches. It was the entire city, and everyone felt a part of it, and that's what made it special.
Sure, I bet. Now, I had an opportunity this week, Adam, to speak to Sarah Hughes. She'll be coming on the program during the new year, and she had seen that I'm having you on the program, and she wanted me to give you her regards and mention that your families go back a little ways.
Oh yes, and we know absolutely know the Hughes for a long time now. They're a wonderful family, and she's obviously very, very busy with the Kingsbridge project with Mark. And
yes,
whenever we see the entire family, we always and certainly have a little bit of Canadian roots as well. It's always fun. We always smile. We always, enjoy, our telling our stories. And certainly, you talk about great athletes. Wow,
Yeah.
She is just a fantastic athlete. More importantly, she is an even better person and comes from a terrific family. And whenever I see us, it's always with the Hughes. The entire family are there. So that speaks volumes about them as people.
Yeah, I bet it does. We're looking forward to speaking to Sarah coming up in the new year. But, Adam, I tell you, it's been a real pleasure having you with us tonight. I appreciate you taking the time out of your Sunday evening to be with us.
Any time. Well, you take care of yourself, and Happy New Year, my friend.
To you too, Adam. Take care. Adam Graves, ladies and gentlemen. Next up, we'll talk to the Super Bowl-winning defensive end from the New York Giants, George Martin, on Sports Talk 1240. Stay with us, folks.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB. Be sure and visit us online at sportstalk1240.com.
Hey, fantasy sports fans. DraftPot has an exclusive offer for Sports Talk 1240 listeners. Sign up today at DraftPot.com with the promo code SportsTalk1240, and DraftPot will match 100% of your first deposit. That's right. Sign up today at DraftPot.com with the promo code SportsTalk1240, and DraftPot will match 100% of your first deposit. What are you waiting for? Do it now.
Country Foot Care, official podiatrists of the New York Lizards, have been delivering state-of-the-art foot care with good old-fashioned caring to Long Island residents for over 30 years. Specialists in sports medicine and foot injuries, Country Foot Care can be reached at 516-741-FEET or online at countryfootcare.com.
Unflippable, unflappable, unleakable. The Gust Buster is the only umbrella that won't flip inside out, rip, tear, or leak. Capable of withstanding winds over 55 miles per hour. All of our umbrellas are constructed of the finest quality materials and backed by a limited lifetime guarantee. What are you waiting for? Visit GustBuster.com and get your Gust Buster today.
Whether you're a couple enjoying a romantic meal for two, a family wanting to dine in a relaxed and friendly setting, or a larger party wanting to celebrate a special occasion, Miller Place Pastoria always combines a warm welcome with the finest contemporary Italian cuisine and wines. Also serving up Long Island's favorite pizza. We're located right on Route 25A in Miller Place. Come visit us today and check us out online at mppastoria.com.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, broadcasting every Sunday night beginning at 8 p.m. right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB, the station that serves your community. And now, back to the show.
All right, we're back with Sports Talk 1240 on WGBB Freeport, New York. Bill Donahue with you on this Sunday evening. I hope you had a great weekend and a wonderful holiday. As we broadcast our last shows on Sports Talk 1240 for 2015. Well, my next guest played his college ball at the University of Oregon. He played his entire career in the NFL from 75 to 88 with Big Blue with the New York Giants, and he was part of the Super Bowl 21 winning team that defeated John Elway and the Denver Broncos. I welcome to Sports Talk 1240 tonight, Mr. George Martin. George, good evening.
Good evening, Bill, and happy holidays to you.
To you too, George. It's great to have you with us tonight.
Thank you very much.
Now, let's talk about growing up before you hit Oregon. What were your favorite teams, any favorite players, your idol, et cetera?
Well, first of all, Bill, I wasn't really a football follower. I wasn't a football fan. I was more of a basketball fan. I played basketball in high school. I was an All-American. And I went to the University of Oregon on a dual scholarship, and I played both basketball and football my first 2 years. So really my admiration and my desires tend to go toward basketball rather than football.
Uh-huh. Who did you follow?
Well, I followed the Lakers for a long, long time.
Okay.
I was a big Showtime fan, when
yeah.
they had all the greats out there. So and my three sons and I, we always loved watching the Lakers, so we were kind of immersed in that Laker tradition.
Talk a little bit about, for us, George, your college football days at Oregon. They were then the Pac-8. They're now the Pac-12. before you were drafted by the Giants in the 11th round of the 75 draft. How did you fare in college?
Well, Bill, I can tell you that there was no resemblance of what the Ducks are today when
yeah.
we played. I mean, we had a very good defense, and when you look at the names that played with me in college, you would have thought that we were a standout football team. We had Dan Fouts was my quarterback, who went on to have an All-Pro and Hall of Fame career out at San Diego.
Right.
Russ Francis had just a spectacular career as a tight end, both with New England and subsequently out in Oakland. And then we had a guy by the name of Tom Graham, who played 10 years with the Denver Broncos, and many others that went on to the NFL. But our college, unfortunately, our college experience did not resemble our professional experience, and it was a time when I guess the program was growing. It was very early on. It was prior to Phil Knight coming in and spending many dollars resurrecting the program. So it was a great time, but it was a time of humility, I can say that.
Very good. Now, your first year with the Giants, we have Bill Arnsparger as head coach. Now, if folks don't remember Mr. Arnsparger, that was his first head coaching job. He came in as a vaunted defensive coordinator with the Miami Dolphins, headed into New York. Talk a little bit about the reign of Bill Arnsparger, George.
Well, it was a brief reign, but
yes.
I was very fortunate to be a part of it. You know, he was kind of heralded as a defensive genius coming out of Miami, and they'd had obviously
right.
some success down there with the perfect season and all of that, and Bill was credited for having a great defensive mind. And he came up, and he wanted to have a complete change as far as the personnel, and he wanted to go toward youth, and I got caught up in that youthful transition, thank God. And had a very, very good rookie year. I made Rookie of the Year for the New York Football Giants. But still, as a team, we did not know success. We were always finished the bottom of the division. And as a consequence, Bill Arnsparger, his career was short-lived.
Sure was. Now, we're looking at 1975-76. The New York Giants are playing, folks, believe it or not, at Shea Stadium. That was the year that all four New York teams played at Shea Stadium, the Jets, the Giants, the Mets, and the Yankees during the refurbishment of Yankee Stadium. You have such names on the Giants as Doug Coder, Spider Lockhart, Bob Tucker at tight end, Joe DiNello yep. kicking, and Norm Snead and Craig Morton. You got mm-hmm. to play with Mendenhall, Van Pelt, and a very young Harry Carson, right?
That is correct. As a matter of fact, Mendenhall was my roommate. Harry Carson, he came in 76, so he came the first year at Giant Stadium.
Okay.
But yeah, it was a great indoctrination into the NFL. We were very close-knit organization, and I could not believe the circumstances that we were playing in, because Shea Stadium at that time was really kind of the armpit of all professional sports. And I said, if this is the NFL, I've taken a large step backwards. But it was the year before we were christened Giant Stadium in the Meadowlands, and that was the state of the arts back in its day.
Sure was. Now, we go to 1978, and not such a great year for the New York Football Giants. I remember watching in my dorm room on November 19th, 1978, George, the Giants ahead 17-12 to the Philadelphia Eagles. A couple of seconds to play. The Eagles are out of timeouts. And Joe Pisarcik goes to hand off to Larry Zonka. You remember that play?
It wasn't a miracle on 34th.
No. It
took us many, many years to try to live that one down, Bill, and I don't
yeah.
think we've still gotten over it.
No, the folks still remember it as the fumble. Poor Joe Pisarcik. I know he's working for the Players Association now. He ended up signing with the Eagles after that. For those folks that don't know, handoff was fumbled by Hall of Famer Larry Zonka, returned for a touchdown, picked up by Herman Edwards, the Philadelphia
yes,
Eagles,
yep.
of all people, folks, who, yes, later went on to coach the New York Jets. Now, to the Eagles
right.
fans, it's the miracle at the Meadowlands, but to the Giant fans, it's the fumble. So
it was the fumble, yeah.
How did Joe feel after that?
Well, I can tell you this, and it's no secret. Joe was actually put in security, and he was ushered out of the stadium under protective duty because there were death threats on both he and Zonka's life as a result of that miscue. And, of course, our offensive coordinator was fired immediately, and it subsequently led to the demise of John McVay.
John McVay, yeah.
Right. So it was, you know, they say that every cloud has a silver lining. I think the silver lining, Bill, and that was it was the beginning of the renaissance for the Giants because after the discourse between management and ownership, you know, they brought in a general manager who kind of began to turn things around in George Young.
Exactly. Andy Robustelli was GM before that. George Young comes in to take the reins, and things start to turn around. We're speaking to George Martin tonight on Sports Talk 1240. Now, they brought in Ray Perkins, and Ray Perkins had a defensive coordinator for one, I believe, several seasons named Bill Parcells.
That is correct. Bill was our defensive coordinator, and we fell in love with this guy. He was a Jersey guy. He was a no-nonsense guy, but he was a smart guy. He was a supreme motivator. And as I said, we played our hearts out for him. And in Giant tradition, we had a stellar defense and, you know, had a mediocre offense, unfortunately. And when Bill was named as the head coach, most of the defense took offense to it because we didn't want to lose, our defensive coordinator.
Right.
And as it turns out, it was, again, very fortuitous for the entire organization because he subsequently brought the golden ring of championship to the franchise.
He sure did. Now, what was the mindset that George Young brought in, George, that sort of turned things around for Big Blue?
Well, it was sort of a mixed blessing. And as you recall, there was a little bit of discourse between George Young and Bill Parcells. Bill Parcells famously saying that if you're asking me to cook the meal, I should be also allowed to buy some of the groceries.
Exactly.
But I think George Young came in and he established a bit of discipline. I think he also had an eye for talent. After all, he's the one who drafted Lawrence Taylor, who went on to have just an unbelievable career and have a great impact on the Giants franchise. But he and Parcells did clash at times. Bill Parcells wanted to change the defense from a 4-3 to a 3-4, which he was very linebacker-oriented, and you know, he wanted to have some dominance in the boardroom as the players that he wanted to bring in. So I think it was just, you know, two geniuses at work, and of course they're going to, you know, butt heads on occasion, but it all worked out fine in the end.
It did. Two Hall of Famers, definitely. In 83, Parcells comes in and takes the reins as the head coach for good. He also brings in guys like Bill Belichick and Romeo Crennel, who turn into fairly good NFL coaches.
Which just shows you his genius wasn't limited to discovering talent on
right.
the field. I mean, he surrounded himself by an outstanding. I mean, if you look at his tight end coach, who is still coaching today, unfortunately, down in Dallas.
Yeah.
You know, still coaching. You know, and Romeo Crennel is still in the league coaching. And, of course, Belichick, who may surpass them all one day, who will be a surefire Hall of Famer. And, you know, his dominance up there in New England is just kind of unprecedented so far. So Bill Parcells deserves a lot of that credit because that's the talent that he discovered, he nurtured, and he made a part of that that championship formula at the New York Giants.
Definitely. Well, I bet you Belichick's not too happy tonight.
Well, they lost. you know, it all came down to a flip of a coin.
Oh, boy. What a ball game that was, I'll tell you.
A lesson learned, but kudos to the Jets. I mean, you know, they're the preeminent team in New York right now, and, you know, you got to give them their due, and we wish them well in the postseason.
You played, George, we're speaking to George Martin tonight on Sports Talk 1240. Guys like Leonard Marshall, Carl Banks, Harry Carson, and, of course, Lawrence Taylor. Talk about some of your great teammates on the Giant defense.
Oh, wow. I mean, I always tell the story that I'm going to be so proud one day to tell my grandchildren that I played with the legendary Lawrence Taylor, who revolutionized professional football and was, I think, singularly responsible for changing the entire dynamics of our legacy at the New York Giants. I mean, he brought an attitude of winning and just a tenacity that we'd never, ever seen before. And we had individual talents prior to Lawrence getting there, but I think he was the glue to kind of homogenize it all together. Harry Carson, who Dick Vermeil famously said that, you know, I don't know what the prototypical linebacker should look like in the NFL, but I know that she wore number 53, and I thought that was the greatest compliment ever given to Harry Carson. So it was just great to be a part of that wonderful construct that Bill Parcells put together. And, you know, Bill, there's a sort of a small documentary going on right now called The Timeline from NFL Films, and it talks about our closeness and our uniqueness there at the New York Football Giants and how we still have that even to this day.
Amazing. Folks will have to check that out, Timeline on what is it on, Harry? George?
It's on the NFL channel, and it premiered about 2 weeks ago. Yeah, and it's called The Timeline, the Jersey Guys.
Gotcha. Okay, now, yeah. George was part of the great 86 Giant team that when they won a franchise record 14 games. In that Super Bowl that year, Super Bowl 21, we look at late in the second quarter, George sacks the great John Elway in the end zone for his safety, and it cut the Bronco lead from 10-9, where it held until halftime. Talk to us a little bit about that play where you get Elway.
Well, you know, I've heard a lot of people say that was a turning point in the game, and I modestly say, well, it was certainly a team effort. But just before that, I had a rookie tackle by the name of Eric Howard playing next to me, mm-hmm. and I told Eric before we broke the huddle, I said, disregard anything I say, no matter how much I tell you, how much I yell at you, just disregard what I say, and it's called a dummy call. And so as we broke the huddle, I yelled over to Howard. I said, Howard, we're going to run a game, a me game. And, of course, the offensive linemen perked up. They heard that, and they just knew that we were going to run a stunt between Eric and I. And I said it to him again. I said it emphatically, and I said it very loudly. And sure enough, as soon as I faked coming into the inside, the offensive tackle stepped down very hard. And I looped around him and going to the outside. And John Elway was flushed out, and he ran right into my arms, to be honest with you. And there was my first and only safety of my NFL 14-year career.
Amazing. Now, did he say anything to you, Elway?
No.
No.
Other than ouch, no, he didn't say anything.
Okay. Just wanted to check. Now, another great facet of the George Martin career, when he became the NFL's all-time leader in touchdowns scored by a defensive lineman with 5, you brought back an interception for 56 yards against the then St. Louis Cardinals. The record had been previously held by a Hall of Famer by the name of Bob Lilly from the Dallas Cowboys. That must have been a great honor for you, George.
It was indeed. And I remember breaking that record, and I was so proud because you always want to have a legacy. You know, whatever you do in life, you want to make sure that there's sort of a hallmark that you leave behind. So breaking that record of Bob Lilly was something that I thought was extremely very special and I was very proud of. Only to have it broken a few years later by Jason Taylor of Miami,
right.
Subsequently finished his career with the Jets. The only caveat is there's actually two of them. I sat down and I wrote Jason Taylor a congratulatory note, which I thought would be a class act because I always expected one to come from Bob Lilly for some reason. I never got it.
Uh-huh.
And secondly, you know, Jason and I finished our collective careers with 8 touchdowns apiece. My misfortune is that I scored one of my touchdowns as an offensive tight end, and thus I didn't get credit for it. So,
yeah. Oh boy! Now, the play where you set the record, George, for you returned an interception for 78 yards in a game. Believe it or not, against the Denver Broncos, folks, the team that the Giants defeated in the Super Bowl. And Bill Parcells calls that play, George, the greatest football play he's ever seen. Describe that for us.
Well, Bill, first of all, let me tell you that a lot of people heap a lot of praise on me for that play because of Bill Parcells' analysis that it was the greatest play he's ever seen. But he wasn't talking just about George Martin. The reason it was the greatest play he ever seen because it took such a team effort in order for me to get to the end zone. I mean, 78 yards on my own is kind of an improbability. But, you know, I think when you look at the play itself, the way it's set up, the way I had an escort and I got great blocks down the road, down the entire field, except for Lawrence Taylor, of course, who was still yearning for the ball. But the person who made that play go was Mark Collins, who ran almost 100 yards and made the last key block just before I got to the end zone. I think that's what Bill Parcells means when he said it was the greatest play because it took a collective team effort to get this lumbering defensive lineman down the field and into the end zone. And it is one of the proudest plays that I have ever accomplished in my career.
I bet. Now, another touchdown you returned, George, was in 1980. You lined up as a tight end.
Yes, that was against our nemesis, the Dallas Cowboys. And, you know, I'm very proud that I was a recipient of a touchdown pass from my very good friend, Phil Sims. It was something that was totally unexpected. And, you know, back in those days, to be able to outsmart the Dallas Cowboys was pretty impressive. And they never thought that this defensive end had the ability to catch the ball. And I literally ran the pattern, uncovered because they didn't think that I'd be able to catch it. But it was a very nice 5-yard touchdown pass from Phil Sims, and the rest, as they say, is history.
Exactly. Now, what would you say, George, was your greatest thrill or your greatest memory in your storied career?
Well, I don't think there's any question about it. I mean, when you toil in the NFL for 14 years, and only one of those years do you have the good fortune of going to the Super Bowl, which is only part of the equation. The other part is winning the Super Bowl. I have to say that, 86, going out to Pasadena and beating the Denver Broncos, without question, that reigned supreme as being my proudest moment, my spot in the sun when we all came together and we became champions. And we sort of eliminated the ghost of the past because we were always haunted by the previous champions of the New York Giants, who had always won championships, never a Super Bowl, of course. And
right.
People kept wondering, were we ever going to return to that status? And in 1986, we put it all together, and under Bill Parcells' direction, we brought a championship to New York, the first Super Bowl for us, and obviously not the last.
What a thrill. Now, you also had the opportunity, George, we're speaking to George Martin tonight on Sports Talk 1240, to introduce Parcells at his Hall of Fame induction in Canton, Ohio.
Well, you know, who would have believed that of all the players, and, you know, you it's the who's who that Bill Parcells has coached throughout his stellar career. I mean, you look at all of the assistant coaches who've gone on and had, you know, great careers, or even NFL owners who could have had that honor. And yet still he chose me. I still can't explain it. I just grin and say that it's one of the proudest moments that I've had off the field to introduce Bill Parcells in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And it's something that I'll never forget. As a matter of fact, in my office, I have a picture of me in that induction ceremony, and it's the only photo that I have on my wall. And that speaks to the importance of that ceremony.
I bet. Now, George, you don't only have a storied career on the field. You do some great work for people off the field. Let's talk about your walk for 9/11.
Well, you know, Bill, I think, anybody who's a New Yorker or in the tri-state region will remember September 11th, 2001, and not favorably. And I always remember it when I saw a group of individuals at the worst time of our point in history. Really distinguish themselves as first responders and rescue and recovery workers. And, unfortunately, as great as their contribution was, you know, we did not as a nation reciprocate in kind because they went down there and sacrificed their careers, their health, and some of them their very lives, and put themselves in harm's way in order to protect and safeguard the freedoms that we enjoy every day. And we, as a nation, sort of turned our back on them when they began to get sick.
Mm-hmm.
And that didn't set well with George Martin, particularly being a New Yorker, a transplanted New Yorker, having my entire career there. I felt it incumbent upon me to use my celebrity status to do something to call attention to their plight and to help raise money for their cause. And so I developed a journey for 911, which would see me walk from the George Washington Bridge in New York all the way to San Diego, California.
Boy,
and
we'd
raised over $3 million for their health care, but more importantly, we brought attention to their plight, and eventually the Zadroga bill, which has been now extended permanently, was eventually passed for the first time, and I'm very, very, very proud of that act.
I can see that, George, yeah. What have you been up to lately these days?
Well, I'm still the co-founder and executive director of Minority Athletes Networking, a charity, a 501c3 charity that was founded more than 30 years ago by myself, Harry Carson, Joe Morris, and a few other former Giants in order to provide mentoring programs and scholarships for inner city kids. And we've been around for 30 years, and I'm still very, very active in that as their executive director. We just finished our great end-of-year holiday program, which we brought Christmas gifts for more than 300 kids in the inner city of Newark. And it's something that we kind of end our year with, and through the great donations of organizations like the New York Giants and Macy's and Hunter Douglas, we can provide a very special holiday treat for some very deserving kids. So things of that nature and my corporate speaking engagements, it keeps me busy, and it's something that I really enjoy doing.
You want to give the folks your website?
Sure, absolutely. They can either go to Minority Athletes Networking, man.com, or they can go to George at georgedmartin.com and either make a contribution or make contact and get more information. It would be our pleasure to continue to have an impact on society, because I think that's what we should all be doing.
Outstanding, George. I tell you, it's been a pleasure having you with us tonight. I truly thank you for taking the time out of your Sunday evening to spend some time with us.
Bill, it has been my pleasure. Thank you so very much. And again, have a very happy holiday and a great new year.
You too, George. Happy New Year. George Martin, folks. What I'd like to do now is remind you ladies and gentlemen about the upcoming Hall of Fame elections in baseball. The results will be announced on January 7th of 2016. We have such players as Ken Griffey Jr., the timeless swing, the grace in the outfield. Reminds everybody of past icons, maybe like Mays, like Clemente. Griffey was seen as one of the preeminent players of his era. He leads the ballot this year. And from what I last saw, he's probably mentioned on almost 100% of the ballots. No one has ever been elected to the Baseball Hall of Fame with 100% of the ballots being reported for that particular player. The closest that's ever been has been Tom Seaver. And people think that perhaps Ken Griffey Jr. can top that this year. Coming in also this year on the Hall of Fame ballot, some new names, Billy Wagner, Ken Griffey Jr., as I said, Jim Edmonds, Trevor Hoffman, and looking at the folks who have been on the ballot before and certainly have a good shot at going into the hall this year, there's 17 former players returning to the 2016 Baseball Writers Association ballot after receiving at least 5% of the overall vote in 2015. These players are, of course, the New York Mets' great catcher, Mike Piazza, who garnered 69.9% of the votes in 2015. He's looking to certainly make more headway and gain election to the Hallowed Shrine in Cooperstown. Jeff Bagwell, 55.7% of the vote, is moving up this year, they say, as well. Tim Raines, the outfielder for the Montreal Expos, among others, certainly deserving of mention in Hall of Fame voting. 55% of the vote he garnered in 2015. Curt Schilling, 39.2%. Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds. Now, there's an interesting situation because, of course, the performance enhancing drug aura that surrounds these two ball players. I have seen that many sports writers are still including them on their ballot this year. Clemens received 37.5% of the vote in 2015, while Barry Bonds, the career leader in home runs, got 36.8%. Rounding out the list, you have Lee Smith, the all-time saves leader, I believe, or Trevor Hoffman has taken that over, with 30.2%. The great designated hitter from the Seattle Mariners, Edgar Martinez. Alan Trammell from the Detroit Tigers. Mike Mussina from the Yankees and the Baltimore Orioles. Jeff Kent, ex-Met, but mainly made his oats as a San Francisco Giant. Fred McGriff, the crime dog. Larry Walker. Gary Sheffield, 11.7% in 2015. Never understood why Sheffield doesn't get a little more support being a 500 home run hitter. Then you have Mark McGwire. Another question mark because of the PED scandal he was involved in. Only got 10% of the vote in 2015. Another one, Sammy Sosa from the Chicago Cubs. The specter of PEDs looms large in his career as well. 6.6% of the vote. Finally, the last player will be Nomar Garciaparra with 5.5% of the vote. By rule, this is the final year on the ballot for both McGuire and Trammell. So they will have to be voted in by the Veterans Committee or the Golden Era Committee, whichever you want to call it, in the future. They will not be included on the baseball writers' ballot due to the extensive years they've been on it already. So that's coming up on January 7th, folks. The Hall of Fame election, we'll be watching that closely. That'll do it for me tonight on Sports Talk 1240. I'd like to thank my guests, Adam Graves and George Martin. And I'd like to thank you for joining us. Stay tuned for hour number two on Sports Talk 1240. I'll be back with you on Sunday evening, January the 10th. Till then, Bill Donahue, wishing you a good evening, folks.
Expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.